Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining Achieving Optimal Wellness, Exercise, and Nutrition. Your host for today is Dee Mascari. Ms. Mascari, you may begin.
Good evening. This is Dee Mascari from the National Multiple Sclerosis Society, Upstate New York Chapter, and I would like to welcome you to tonight's teleconference, Achieving Optimal Wellness, Exercise, and Nutrition. Our speakers are Dr. Mara Kranz, MD, a competitive triathlete living with MS for 18 years, and Brian Quinn, PTA at St. Charles Rehabilitation Network, partner in MS Care of the Long Island Chapter. Dr. Kranz and Brian will answer some of the most frequently asked questions about the benefits and importance of wellness behaviors, exercise, and nutrition to manage the symptoms of MS. Participants will have the opportunity to ask questions at the end of the call. The operator will instruct you on how to do this when the time is right. Thank you so much for being with us tonight. Dr. Kranz, I will now turn the call over to you.
Great, thanks. Hello, and welcome to the nutrition section of the evening. I'm going to take the next 20 minutes or so and just go over some facts with nutrition and MS. I'm going to start by explaining why is nutrition important, and then talk a little bit about what is the recommended diet for MS, and then go on to special considerations for people with MS, different symptoms that people with MS may have and how nutrition can help those different symptoms. Then I'm also going to take a few minutes and talk a little bit about some of the more popular diets that are out there right now that many of you have probably heard about, and then end with, to me, what is the most exciting part, sort of where the nutrition research is headed with MS. So starting out, why is nutrition important? We all know that energy in equals your energy out, so you can't expect to put junk in your tank and have a highly functioning machine. This is especially true with MS and other chronic diseases. We need to truly optimize our nutrition if we want to optimize our functioning. So what is, big question on everyone's mind, what is the recommended diet for MS? And unfortunately, there isn't one diet that's been unequivocally proven to cure MS or even help symptoms in every person. There is, however, a general consensus amongst most neurologists on following recommendations. Basically, you want to eat a well-balanced, nutrient-dense diet consisting of foods high in nutritional value and low in the amount of processing. More specifically, we're going to go through kind of specifics that they talk about. Number one, you want to consume less fats. Specifically, consume less saturated fats from animal sources and less trans fat. Instead, try using oils derived from vegetables, seeds, and fish. You also want to decrease the intake of refined sugar. Number three, you want to make sure you get sufficient fluids, at least 6 to 8 8-ounce servings per day of fluids, preferably most of those servings as water. Number four, you want to eat fish regularly. There's lots of research out there that shows that the omega-3 fatty acids that are found in fish are very beneficial for MS patients. Number five, you want to consume 5 servings of fruits and vegetables per day. You want to try to choose those fruits and veggies from all the colors of the rainbow, so get a nice variety, ensuring you get a mix of antioxidants, and try to have more vegetables than fruits every day. Number six, you want to consume 3 to 4 servings of whole grain products daily. Number seven, shoot for 30 grams of fiber a day in your diet. Number eight, you want to decrease your alcohol and caffeine intake. And number nine, recent research shows the important role of vitamin D, niacin, and the omega-3s and 6s. So talk with your doctor about possible supplementation in those four things if you are not getting enough, if you're unable to get enough of those in your diet. Also, be very careful and wary of any high-dose vitamin diets, especially vitamin C and vitamin E. As I mentioned above, the antioxidants are good, the ones that are found in vegetables and fruit. They may actually have a protective role in the damage that is caused to myelin, but vitamin C and vitamin E may actually stimulate stimulate the immune system, so you do not want to take high doses of those two. The amounts of the antioxidants, including vitamin C and vitamin E, that are found in your food sources are thought to be safe. You just don't want to take high supplementation of vitamin C and vitamin E. So let's talk about some special considerations for people with MS and the different symptoms that they have and how nutrition can help these things. So the number one thing I'm going to talk about first is fatigue. That's the number one cause of disability in patients with MS. And 95% of all patients with MS will experience fatigue sometime in the course of their illness. This is usually made worse. Fatigue is usually made worse by poor nutrition, either because people are making bad choices in their diet or because of poor appetite. Also made worse by inadequate fluid intake and iron deficiency. So you want to, anyone experiencing fatigue, you want to pay special attention to what you're eating on the days that your fatigue is the worst, and perhaps keep a little food log. Some people will find that on the days they eat a lot of junk food or processed food, that exacerbates their symptoms of fatigue. But also some people will notice their fatigue gets worse if they wait long periods of time between their meals. Anytime you have a low blood sugar, it exacerbates the MS symptoms, in particular your fatigue symptoms. So if somebody if you're finding out that it's when you go long periods, you want to try to eat more frequent, smaller meals throughout the day so that that blood sugar doesn't really have a chance to dip too low. I'm sure Brian also is going to talk about the fatigue and exercise and how exercise can help that, but it's important for everybody to understand that you need to fuel yourself before you exercise or go to your physical therapy session. Just a small amount of carbs, carbohydrates, light on the protein, and lots of fluid before you go to do your exercise session or you go to Brian or you go to your physical therapist to have your session, you really need to take some sort of fuel in, not show up with nothing in you, because then you're not going to be able to optimize your exercise time. So something as simple as a waffle with a little jam on it, light like that. You don't want to have a big meal full of protein before you go, because protein takes longer to digest, and it also shunts all the blood to your stomach to digest that and away from your muscles. So again, it will take away from that exercise time. The next thing I wanted to talk a little bit about in MS patients is bone loss. So this is made worse in some patients by inactivity, by steroid use. Steroid use itself wastes the calcium from the bones, inadequate calcium and vitamin D intake, and smoking and hormonal changes after menopause. Both of those interfere with calcium being taken back into the bones. So ways to counteract this bone loss is to increase your calcium and vitamin D intake levels and also increase weight-bearing exercise and yoga, both of which have been shown to increase your bone density. Next thing I'd like to mention is constipation. This is another common symptom found in patients with MS. It's usually made worse by decreased activity again, low-quality diet, and inadequate fluid and fiber intake. So again, I'm segueing into you, Brian, here.
No problem.
Increase your activity level. Again, it helps. And try to get at least 25 to 30 grams of fiber in your diet every day and your 6 to 8 glasses of fluid every day. The next thing I'd like to mention is just bladder problems. So these are specifically found in patients who have minimal ambulatory ability, confined to a wheelchair, or are catheter dependent. They have an increased incidence of urinary tract infections and bladder infections. So you want to, it's a little bit counterintuitive here, because people who suffer from these things try to decrease their fluid intake because they don't want to bother anybody with having to go to the bathroom frequently, but you actually want to increase your fluid intake to clear out that bacteria more frequently. The next thing that's often found is weight gain, and that's often made worse with decreased activity again, limited mobility, and eating quick, quote-unquote, quick foods that are highly processed, such as junk foods and fast foods because people feel they're easier to get. And so if they are suffering from fatigue, they feel it's easier to just pick up some fast junk food on the way home. So you want to try to take in nutrient-dense foods as opposed to calorie-dense foods. And you want to keep healthy prepared snacks handy. And basically, as in everything, there's no easy solution to this, but you want to decrease your calories in and increase your activity or your calories out. The only way to counterbalance that weight gain. On the other side, there are people who suffer from weight loss. They have trouble with weight loss. And sometimes the hunger center itself in the brain is affected by the MS. And in other people, just your decreased activity level can cause decreased appetite. And another thing is the depression that goes along with MS sometimes causes a decreased appetite. So in that case, frequent calorie and nutrient-dense meals and snacks and increasing your activity just to help with the appetite is good for people who are suffering the weight loss. So I just want to quickly touch on some of the MS, quote-unquote MS diets that are out there. The first thing I want to say is make sure everybody understands there is no hard scientific proof that any of them work, but there is lots of anecdotal proof out there, so I just wanted to mention them. The most popular and the most highly researched is the Swank diet. This is a stringent, low-fat diet. It bans all dairy products, gluten, legumes, so beans, and all saturated fat from animal sources. It instead stresses fish and fish oils. And in 1990, Dr. Swank reported in the Lancet Journal that 95% of people newly diagnosed with MS who followed his diet had a good chance of not developing further disability. So everybody was very excited about this study, but unfortunately, no one else has been able to replicate his findings, and many have tried. So some people anecdotally have some success with this, but there's no hard scientific proof out there. And there are several other diets like that, too, often talked about. Dr. Jelinek has a diet that's very similar to the Swank, but it's even stricter than that. And she had MS herself and had some success with it. She wrote a book on that one. And then the other one is Dr. Walls, which is it's sort of a version of the paleo diet that Dr. Walls wrote about. And again, there's no scientific evidence with any of them, but people have had anecdotal success with them. The other ones that people have had some success with, although there's no proof to back it up, is the gluten-free, dairy-free, and vegan diets. And many people have had success with that in varying amounts. So many MS patients like to try those diets and see if it has a beneficial effect on them. To me, the most exciting front in the whole nutrition area right now is all the recent buzz across medical fields really right now about the inflammatory response. It's sort of all the buzz and all the research that's going on right now. And it's thought that this inflammatory response within people is responsible for diseases from cancer to heart disease. That's the latest one that's been in the news a lot, is the heart disease and how we used to think it was fat in the diet. Now it's sugar that's causing an inflammatory response. So they're investigating inflammatory response causing all these things, cancer, heart disease, and autoimmune diseases also. They're starting to be able to identify inflammatory markers within our bodies, within each person. And if they can find those, then they can follow those over time. And it may be very good for the nutrition research because that way you could follow diets and see which diet is increasing your inflammatory markers and which are actually helping them. And it's thought if your inflammatory markers go down, these diseases will all improve. So it's my thought, and I think this is the going theory out there now with these inflammatory markers, is that people may have a genetic predisposition to these inflammatory markers. So even diseases that you used to always say it has a genetic component to, the heart disease and the autoimmune diseases, Now they're saying maybe you just have the genetic component to being hypersensitive to an inflammatory response, and that if you can figure out ways through diet and other means to decrease those inflammatory markers, you may actually help these diseases. And it may be that they're going to find that it's a different diet. It may be a different diet for everybody, and that may be why there hasn't been one diet that has been proven across the board to help everybody, because I firmly believe every body is different, and so it would make sense that every body is going to respond to the nutrition differently within their own body. And also at different times in your life, your own body has different needs. In the winter when I'm not training, my nutritional needs are very, very different than currently when I'm training for an Ironman and I'm spending 2 to 7 hours a day training. My nutritional needs are much different. So it's a very exciting front, and I think they're going to have more and be able to do more research once they start to really zone in on those markers. So we'll see sort of where the future goes with that. But it does make sense then why there isn't one diet that works for everybody. And you see that all the time too. Some people, the paleo diet works for them. Some people, the low-carb diet works for them, the South Beach or something. And some people, vegan works for them. And everybody seems to be different with what diet works for them. And it might be that it's just having different effects on their own inflammatory response. And that is the end of my talk right now. I'll be open for questions, though, later.
Thank you, Dr. Kranz. Good evening. This is Marissa Baum from the National MS Society Long Island Chapter. Our next speaker is Brian Quinn, PTA, from St. Charles Rehabilitation Network, partner in MS Care on Long Island. Thank you so much for being with us tonight, Brian. I'll now turn the call over to you.
Good evening. Thank you very much, Marissa, Dr. Kranz, and thank you for your time tonight, all you folks who are out there. Where I wanted to first start was obviously the topic is talking about exercise and nutrition, but since I am a physical therapist assistant, one of the things I wanted to do with this topic was to basically give you folks some education about physical therapy and how physical therapy ties into exercise, because most people with MS get their exercises from their physical therapist. So I think it's very important that you get some education about physical therapy, the questions to ask your physical therapist, and how to carry over with your exercises after completing an exercise program. First off, I just wanted to give you a definition of what physical therapy was, just in case some of you are not aware of the details of physical therapy and what we do for folks. Physical therapy treats the physical dysfunctions or injury by the use of therapeutic exercise and the application of modalities that are intended to restore and facilitate normal function or development. Who do physical therapists treat? Physical therapists treat everybody from birth to their elder years. We treat patients of all diagnosis categories, from orthopedic conditions to neurological conditions, from pediatrics to orthopedics to neurology types of patients. And the goal for all these patients is to maintain, restore, and improve movement throughout the body. PT looks to maximize an MS patient's activity level. We look to optimize a patient's function with all the daily activities and improving their quality of life. A basic physical therapy treatment session should last anywhere between 2 and 3 times per week. And unfortunately, in the world that we live in today, most physical therapy plans usually just run between 6 and 8 weeks. And I know there's much talk and discussion about why folks with a progressive neurological condition are cut off from physical therapy. That's a discussion we can have, but unfortunately in the world we live in today, we need to give you as much tools as possible in a very short period of time to help you guys throughout the rest of your lives, because every day you're going to have to be dealing with this situation. Basically, one of the things I'm just going to educate you, because this should all take place when you actually go see a physical therapist, but a physical therapist should take a full medical history. They should look at patients' social surroundings, which would include all the things that take place in your house. Do you have stairs? Do you have area rugs? Do you have spaces for proper uses of assistive device? Every day, physical therapist should be able to help you folks in terms of dealing with those types of strategies in your home. Also, when looking at the patient's social surroundings, we should be accessing in and out of your bathrooms and other living areas of the home. Ergonomics is essential in the folk with MS house, having grab bars, having proper banisters throughout the house. How can a physical therapist help patients with multiple sclerosis? Patients can be helpful with MS because we basically look to work on your balance problems, your clumsiness and poor coordination. We should work on dealing with your fatigue issues and trying to deal with strategies of how to deal with that. Maximizing your fitness, whether you're newly diagnosed or somebody who has had MS for 15, 20, 30 years, a program should be tailored based upon your current level of function and your age and what are your activity levels. We should also look to manage your pain. We should also be looking at minimizing muscle weakness. Goals of physical therapy, multiple sclerosis patients. Stretches to prevent and ease spastic muscles. Stretching to help maximize joint mobility. Exercises to maximize muscle strength. Gait training to make your day easier getting around from point A to point B. And balance and coordination training to improve proprioception or where you actually are in space at that point in time. Goals of physical therapy for multiple sclerosis patient. One of the other things we try to do as a goal is that we want to try to teach you how to use assistive devices properly and basically giving you assistive devices that are proper for your functional ability at that point in time. So at any point in time, a physical therapist should be able to help you how to use your cane, walkers, crutches, even scooters and wheelchairs. We should be able to assess all of those different types of things. And this is very important because the physical therapist is the one who's educating you folks out there. Now, getting into more of the meat and guts of the exercise portion, why is exercise so important? Why is it so important to keep active? First off, exercise improves your strength, your overall strength. It improves your posture, which is essential to many different functions of organ function. It also improves your mobility throughout your body. The more active you are, the more your mobility will improve. It also helps to lessen your fatigue. Exercise is also really important because it helps to improve your mood, your confidence, and just your general well-being. Why exercise and what's other reason why to keep active? Exercise also improves your sleep and your appetite. It also improves your fitness levels, improves cognitive functions in your brain. It improves your quality of life, prevents overuse injuries. So as you get older, you can do more and more and more things. It helps you manage with your weight loss, and it improves and maintains level of independence. Exercise is a real important thing. One of the things I wanted to touch on in terms of education for you folks is that when you guys go to a physical therapist, you should be interviewing this physical therapist. Treating patients with MS is very specialized. I've been doing it for 14 years, and every single day I basically learn more and more about treating new patients because one of the things that's unique about MS patients is your uniqueness. Every single one of you is different. I can have 10 MS patients in the room, and everybody's functional level can be completely different. Everybody's ability to perform exercise is completely different. So one of the things that I really wanted to get a message across to all you folks, exercise is really specifically for you and your specific needs. So it's very difficult sometimes just to talk because I saw some of the questions about exercise, what could help. What may help one person function may not help that other person function. So I think it's really, really important, and I get this message across, that the person that's evaluating you in a physical therapy setting should have a great knowledge of MS. I think it's very important that that takes place and you ask those questions when you first arrive at the PT office. Because like I said, physical therapy, we treat everything, but there are some physical therapists out there who do specialize in specific diagnoses or specific conditions. And MS, in my opinion, is one that you really need to have a strong knowledge about treating those patients. Exercise programs should be developed by either, you know, obviously a physical therapist, but we actually do utilize athletic trainers. So that is something that you'll definitely run across, especially in today's world where, like I say, exercise, physical therapy programs end early due to a lot of, you know, insurance types of situations. So a lot of times folks get referred to gyms in their local communities. And athletic trainers predominantly run exercise gyms. So once again, that's another line of healthcare professionals that you should be interviewing when you first meet them. Talk to them about your condition. See if they understand how a patient with MS works. See that when it's early in the morning, they should be developing strategies that work best for your current level of function. Now, in terms of that topic, in terms of when should you do exercises, my experience is most folks with MS function better in the morning. They function better when it's not as hot out because of temperature constraints and the sensitivity to heat. I think short periods of durations of exercising works best for most folks, meaning that just we don't need to do a half an hour of exercise or an hour of exercise to feel like you get effectiveness out of it. Even a 15-minute period of time for exercising could be extremely, extremely beneficial to any of you folks. So, for example, one of the things I always get asked every day is, what's one of the most important things that I should do when finishing my physical therapy program? And by far, my number one recommendation is getting into a good stretching program. Stretching by far is probably one of the most important exercises to keep your body healthy. Any athlete will tell you, or any person who even Dr. Kranz can tell you, exercising is extremely important to keep her joints mobile, keep the muscles lengthened and nice in a good flex position, and it just gives you a much greater well-being feeling when performing activities. So every day you should be getting down, if you can do them on the ground, and this is where the physical therapist can come in place, because physical therapists can give you different options for performing stretches. For example, the hamstrings, which is the muscles in the back of the upper thigh, there's a multitude of ways you can do them. You can either stretch them out by laying on your back. Another option could be standing in front of a set of staircases and maybe getting your leg up to the second step and bowing over, and you'll feel a stretch behind your knee. That's another option. Another option is, which we'll get talking about in a while, is having your family member participate in your exercise program, where a patient should always have a family member come in, because the physical therapist education does not just stop with the patient, but it should be very much involved with their family and also. So if you are going to a physical therapy program, make sure a caregiver can come with you to maybe a couple of sessions to also get the education that you should be getting from your physical therapist. So that's greatly important. So in terms of your exercising, your exercise programs can range in duration, obviously based upon your functional abilities. But whether you can do 5 minutes of exercise a day or an hour of exercise a day, the fact that you're doing the exercise is the optimal point here. So every day, start getting into a routine. One of the things I highly recommend my patients doing is, number one, getting printouts of all your exercises from your physical therapist. We have wonderful tools that are out there at our fingertips now on computers where we can actually print out your exercise program for you, which should also always include the number of repetitions you should be doing that exercises, the number of times a day you should be doing those exercises, the frequency of doing those exercises. So that's number one you should be getting from your physical therapist is, you know, actual printouts of those exercises, because everybody has that ability to do that in the industry today. So that's really an important thing. The second thing they should do is kind of – put together a plan for you in terms of how you should exercise. Just like Dr. Kranz was talking about, basically keeping a log or of when you're doing your exercises, what you're doing, and how long that you're doing that, because that kind of gives us an idea of progression that you're actually taking place. If I have a patient, for example, who's, I'm going to say, diagnosed for 10 years, but has never exercises at all, and unfortunately she's starting to regress, I'm not going to give that patient an exercise program where they're doing stuff for 30 to 40 minutes or an hour a day, because most likely that type of patient is going to get very discouraged because their bodies are not used to that sort of activity. So basically what we'll do is we'll start out slow. We'll start out with their program for, say, 5 to 10 minutes and see how they tolerate it. And then each week we'll add a couple of activities so their plan and their program grows up to a decent period of time, what can fit into your lifestyle. So that's all those types of things you should definitely be getting from your healthcare professional who's putting it together. Another thing that's actually important with getting information from your physical therapist, basically there's two facets in terms of physical MS that we talk about in terms of keeping you flexible and mobile, but the other part of exercise is basically creating stability. Stability is an optimal portion for any type of patient, but specifically with MS patients, because that helps to fight off your balancing issues. It keeps you more sturdy while you're walking, whether it's going upstairs, whether it's walking normal, walking down. It basically, we want to create a stronger core. So that's one of the catchphrases that you'll hear in the field now, that you need to get good core stabilization. Now, for example, just like talking about with the stretching, physical therapists or athletic trainers should be able to give you different varieties of core stabilization exercises, whether that they are laying on your back, teaching you how to do exercises for core stabilization that way, or getting more advanced where you're actually on your feet and doing actual dynamic motions to create core stability. So there's a huge array of different abilities that can take place with core stabilization. And your physical therapist should be being able to guide you through those different stages of core stabilization. So obviously, based upon your activity level, those core stabilization exercises will be introduced. Core stabilization is an exercise in critical for providing balance and mobility in the MS patient. One element of balance is the ability to maintain a steady trunk while your limbs are actually moving. These exercises obviously should be taught by your physical therapist or your athletic trainer, and they can absolutely be done in the home setting, which is the other thing that we is really, really important with your physical therapist, that, like I said to you, education-wise, make sure that they're giving you those home exercise programs. Your home exercise program should be starting the first day at going to your physical therapy sessions. Because, like I said, with the nature of insurance in the world today, you want to start out with as much education as possible. And day one at your evaluation, physical therapist should be absolutely be giving you a home exercise program starting at that point in time. People talk about, wanted me to talk about what's better to do cardiovascular, to do weight training, such like that. Once again, disclosure is everybody's exercise program should be designed individually for your own functional activities at the beginning. But one of the things that I see as a whole I think is really good, I highly recommend aquatic therapy for my patients in conjunction with their physical therapy program. Getting yourselves in the water is a phenomenal type of thing because, number one, being in the water, it takes a lot of stress off of your joints. For folks who have some range of motion limitations, it's a great way to be able to bring your joints through range of motion in a buoyancy type of state. So, and the other thing that's an actual real, real important thing with aquatic therapy is that when you go to a pool, you need to ask the questions of, what's the temperature of the pool kept at? absolutely important, because you don't want to be in a setting where the water is too warm, because you obviously don't want to overheat your systems. So basically, pool water is an optimal question. I believe, you know, everybody kind of talks, but I think water in, you know, the high 70s, low 80s is optimal temperature to function in the water. Anything that gets close up to 90 degrees is obviously way too hot, and I think would be detrimental. So that's definitely questions. Wherever you're going to be looking for a pool, have those places that actually have pools have programs for aquatic therapy for all different types of patients. So once again, the people who are giving those classes, you should talk to those patients, tell them what your diagnoses are, and basically see what you can and you can't do in the pool. So that's a real area of importance. In terms of cardiovascular exercise, I highly recommend more than anything else, just because of stress on the joints and such. I'm not a big fan of treadmills for MS patients. I think they can be kind of dangerous in a lot of ways due to the facts of some folks who got a little bit of a drag with their during their gait. Because if you're on a treadmill and, God forbid, you drag your foot and you slip and fall, you can definitely get hurt. So in the times of cardiovascular exercise, I highly recommend. I love recumbent bikes. I love general stationary bikes. And then for your upper extremities, which always seem to get overlooked with MS patients, a machine called the UBE. It's a upper body. It's basically a bicycle for your arm. Is a type of exercise that is great for getting your heart rate and really strengthening your cardiovascular system. I like to be doing based upon things. I like to do things both in a dynamic standpoint where your feet are actually moving during the exercises, but I also like to be doing a lot of exercises where you're more in a static position and working some exercises that way. So I think your exercise programs should have a nice mixture of both dynamic exercising along with static exercising. A static exercise, an example of that would be, say, a leg press. That's usually a popular piece of equipment to help strengthen your quads and your hip muscles and up in your hip. More dynamic exercises would be more of like gait training exercises and working on your balance and coordination. An important thing in terms of working on your balance and coordination, when you go to interview a physical therapist, to make sure that they have a set of parallel bars in their clinics. That is optimal to a safe environment so that you can do your gait training. So absolutely, you know, any sort of physical therapy clinic should have a set of parallel bars. And if they don't, you know, that's most likely not going to be an appropriate facility for you, because a lot of exercise that I actually do with my patients, specifically in a dynamic setting, I put my patients in parallel bars because, God forbid, they lose their balance. They're in a safe environment in the parallel bars. Let's see. I'm trying to look at some other questions in here. Just what Dr. Cran said, I think she hit on a very important point. Before you're exercising, make sure you're taking in the proper nutrition and liquids. It happens far too many times where people come into the office on an empty tank of gas, and then we start doing some exercises for 30, 45 minutes, and they basically their energy levels are depleted, and they just don't feel good. So absolutely highly recommended that you eat the diet that she's recommending to you, along with the proper fluids before the programs. Just in conclusion, just to reiterate, exercise should be introduced by the proper healthcare professionals with the knowledge of MS. Stretching exercises should be done on a daily basis, specifically for those folks with tone and some spastic muscles. Stretching will definitely help with those types of situations. Time of day the exercise is done is important to maximize your energy levels. Like I was saying, most folks function best in the morning because their energy levels are the greatest. But obviously, based upon working and such like that, sometimes that's not feasible. So sometimes you may have to plan on doing a little bit in the morning, doing a little bit in the evening. Exercise programs should be designed specifically to the patient's need, but always emphasize stretching, core stabilization, balance and coordination activities, gait training, and also always dealing with your overall cardiovascular health. And I thank you for your time.
Thank you so much, Brian. I'll now turn it over to the operator for questions and answers further.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question, please press the number one key on your phone now. Again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press the number one key on your telephone now. Our first question comes from Joan. Joan, go ahead. Joan, your line is live. Our next question comes from Ellen. Ellen, go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thank you both. Very good information. I was wondering if you had some advice. I'm in a position where I'm in a wheelchair, so I don't have any mobility in my legs whatsoever.
Okay.
I do have a pretty good diet, drink a lot of fluids, and have physical therapists come to my house twice a week and stretches my legs while I lie on my stomach. But my challenge is that it's a little embarrassing, but it's not so much constipation as much as bowels that are hard. And I just don't know. I'm sure it's due to immobility mostly, just because it's only been a few years that I've been in that position, and I was okay beforehand. But I don't know what else more I can do if I don't have the mobility and the diet and the drinking, the liquid, you know, going in the right direction. Is there any advice you can give me?
Yeah, Ellen, let me ask you, how is your fiber intake? Do you know?
Yeah, you know, it's not 30 like you're saying, but I do put, like, you know, flaxseed on my cereal, make sure I eat fiber one cereal. I try to have, you know, an apple or pear type thing, so I try to do, but I doubt it's at 30.
Right.
Like you said, but I'm trying to get it higher.
Get it higher, yeah. Take note of that and actually kind of measure it out a few days in a row or do a week of your fiber intake, because you'd be surprised. It's pretty tough for most people to get it up to 30 grams a day.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you have to be pretty conscientious about it. That's a lot of fiber. so that would be my first recommendation. The other thing is what Brian had referred to about the stationary bike for your arms.
Yeah.
Is there a way you can get over to the gym or the physical therapist's office to use that? Because it's not just mobility in your legs that's going to help the digestive system. It's any kind of activity will just help the circulation and help the blood flow to the digestive tract to help it. So any form of activity that you're able to do will help.
Okay, that's really good information, because I actually do have one of those bike pedalers.
Oh, good.
To do for my legs, but I can't do it anymore. But I could put it on the desk for your arms as well, and that's what I think you guys are referring to. So
yes.
Going back to a caregiver, do you have a situation where, I know you mentioned the physical therapist coming twice a week, but the other 5 days a week, is there anybody who's given you any sort of range of motion exercises for your legs, just to give that portion of your body motion?
No. I have a guy, my husband's here, but he doesn't do that, unfortunately.
Yeah, because that's what I was trying to talk to you about, because, like I was saying, you're stationary, you're in your chair, but
yeah.
If he can get you, it's simple stuff that can be done where it's just simple range of motion he can give you in your legs. That helps with all of those different facets that you're talking about. You would be surprised.
Okay, great. Well, thank you both. I appreciate it.
Also, Ellen, I'll just add to that also that with the physical therapy also, ask if they can show you a few twists, because I'm a yoga instructor also, and I do yoga therapy,
uh-huh.
And twisting is so good for the whole intestinal system, and those are very easy to do. I lead a few classes for people in chairs, and twisting is a very easy exercise to do, and what happens is that gives you the mechanical stimulation of the intestines that you don't get if your mobility is decreased. You know, normally when we're walking around, we're churning all that stuff up. But those twisting exercises can help to kind of give you that mechanical help in that area too.
Great, great. Okay, I'll ask her. Thank you.
Okay.
Our next question comes from John. John, go ahead.
Hi, good evening. How's everyone? I'm actually wondering if there's any information regarding two things. I currently take telomeres, and what I've done is I've looked up its makeup, and most of it is a series of different B vitamins, B6, B12, B1, 2, and niacin, and it also is comprised of the D vitamin, the D3 series, and it seems to help me overall beneficially in terms of like improving in lessening the symptoms of my MS. In regards to exercise, in regards to you tiring out, I take something called terkesterone, which seems to allow me to sustain doing an exercise period for, rather than say, let's say 15, 20 minutes, I could do it maybe half hour, 40 minutes. So I'm wondering, do you have any information on that?
Well, one of the things that you should never get from a physical therapist is we really try, because we're not experts in it, we do not recommend medications and or vitamins and minerals. So that's definitely something you should be talking to your physician about to maximize, you know, those types of needs, because that's a realm that I definitely don't feel comfortable getting involved with. But Dr. Kranz can definitely discuss that.
And I'm actually just looking it up, to be honest, because I've never heard of it. So it's steroids. So am I understanding it's a like chemically derived testosterone?
Well, it's a derivative of I do believe it's a derivative of testosterone is what it is, but it's called the reason I remember it is because I think of the word turkey.
Right, it's testosterone. I was able to pull it up. And unfortunately, I don't have any experience with it, and I'm not sure. Is that something that was recommended by your neurologist?
No, I actually went ahead. I'm very proactive in diagnosing myself.
Good.
And to, you know, because the best person who's going to be able to take care of the symptoms that you have is yourself.
I agree.
So you understand yourself better than everyone else, and you know... you know exactly what you'll need to go ahead and tackle and reduce doing in order to optimize and get yourself at the best that you can be in terms of your health. And, you know, as we all know, MS can become a very progressive condition if you just leave it alone. And the bottom line is you have to be very proactive.
I agree, 100%. The only thing I'm always, and for myself, I try to stay away from any supplements unless they're kind of needed. So I really don't know. The big question is, what are the side effects from testosterone? And I don't know the answer to that. The vitamins that you are on all sound very good. The B vitamins themselves are always good in any neurologic disorders, so that's great. Niacin is great. Vitamin D, very good. The only thing, again, I'm just going to caution about is having too much. So super high doses of the vitamin Bs, also along with vitamin C and E, have been shown to be questionable.
Right.
So, you know, some vitamins, all you're doing is buying yourself expensive urine because you just urinate out anything that you don't need. But some vitamins can actually cause damage. So I would just, the key is, and this is what I have always done, is I find a neurologist that I really, really trust, and I go and kind of research stuff myself, and then I go and discuss it with them and ask, you know, if I do find something that I want to try or I give it a try, I discuss with them the side effects and just see, you know, is it worth it for me and is it worth trying it?
Right. No, of course, definitely. But, I also realize that there are some things that are also very new to them as well. So
I agree. Like I've never heard of testosterone.
Testosterone.
Yeah.
Well, you know, interestingly enough, I also have been taking right along oil of oregano,
yes,
which I'm not sure if anyone else has, but it has the effects of it is that it's antibacterial, antifungal, antimicrobial, and oregano is actually you know, something that will not have any negative effect on you, and you can take it and you actually feel better. And I actually went ahead and took a look on Google just to see if maybe this is something I'm doing that's very strange and out there. And there's an entire number of people who swear by it, and I'm like, well, where was I?
yeah, no, there are some, definitely some different things, and things that aren't going to cause any, like, there's no harm in oil of oregano for sure. So
right.
They're definitely worth a try, and if those make you feel better, and I suggest that all the time in your diets too, by all means, try to go gluten-free for a month, because for some people it really, really, really helps. And if it does, if it can be that easy to just cut out gluten and you feel better, by all means, do it, because there are no downsides, as it were, to that. And try them, but try to be a little bit methodical in it. Don't do three things at one time or just give it a little bit of time. You know, try to be a little methodical. I know I've tried just about every diet out there, you know, within reason, and the only thing I keep coming up with for myself is processed foods and exercise. If I miss a week in the gym, I'm a mess, and if I eat too much processed food, I'm a mess. So those are, like, my triggers that I found. So it's good to find the things to avoid and the things that make you feel better. So, you know, kind of doing your own personal experimentation is very good in those fields, because just like Brian just mentioned, every single one of us with MS is so, so different. You know, so our nutrition needs are going to be different. The things that help each of us are going to be different. So it's good to sort of be your own advocate and try out different things, as long as their side effects are bad.
No, of course. The one of the other things that I also do very adamantly is I avoid using any cookware or anything that's covered in Teflon, because I do know that, like, if you happen to use anything metal and it scratches, that the Teflon can release carcinogens.
Yeah.
And you may inadvertently ingest something that it may taste good, but it's burnt because, you know, it may have inadvertently gotten a little bit of that Teflon on there, and that could not be doing anything good for your body.
Right. Well, and it's the same with the BPA, once they realize that the BPA that's in the plastics.
Right, exactly. And I avoid that as well. So
there's lots of, yeah, things out there that they, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Our next question comes from Susan. Susan, go ahead.
Hi. Actually, you kind of started answering, I have a question very similar to what you were talking about, and that is, I'm interested in doing, like, taking out gluten and taking out dairy and all those things, but I kind of want to do it, like you said, in a very systematic way so I can see what works and what doesn't. Is there, like, a timeline? Does gluten take longer to get out of your system than dairy? And do you know what I mean? How would you organize it in terms of, you know?
You know, it's not even, to be honest with you, how long it takes to get out of your system. MS itself just has the waxing and waning properties. That's why anything in MS is so hard to prove that it's helping it, because the natural course of MS is that it gets worse, it gets better, it gets worse in most cases. So it's sometimes it's hard to tell what is making it better and what is just the natural course of the disease.
Mm.
So that's why what we really need out there, and they're starting to understand this, is just long-term, really good studies on the different nutrition things. But I would recommend at least a month, like do gluten-free first or dairy-free, whatever one you choose first, but do it for a month just so that you can follow, and especially for women, you want to at least follow a month so that you can follow the course of your menstrual cycle if you're still menstruating, because for sure hormones affect the course of MS also. So it's good to kind of give it a month, not to get all of it out of your system, but just to make sure that you're experiencing your whole month long of symptoms that you usually come and go. So that's what I recommend, a month. And exactly what you said, eliminate one at a time and see how you feel. And keep a log, for sure. And during that time, keep a log, because what you often find and what you may find in with all of these diets, cutting down gluten, dairy, is that you decrease your processed foods, because a lot of people who eat a high gluten diet, they actually eat a lot of processed carbs. That's where the gluten is coming from. So sometimes it's the process of eliminating the processed foods, and same with dairy. You know, they're eating a lot of highly processed things. So keep a log not only of what you're eating, but also your activity level, because this is another phenomenon, and I'm sure you see this, Brian, when people start to pay attention to their diet and start to feel better with their nutrition, you're actually able to increase your activity more and get more exercise. So keep an eye on all those things and do it for a month long. And then go back onto your gluten for, you know, a few days, a week, and then try the dairy.
Okay, so do one at a time. Okay.
Do one at a time, yes, absolutely.
Great. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Dr. Kranz and Brian. I hope everyone enjoyed the call tonight. The series continues on May 21st with a teleconference on cognitive fitness, keeping the mind moving, and the final call will be on June 11th on the disease-modifying therapies, your treatment options. Please contact your chapter to register for these teleconferences. Please stay on the line to answer 5 quick questions about this program. Your input helps us to better meet your needs in the future. Operator?
Our first polling question is, as a result of the teleconference, I am able to identify at least one small lifestyle change that will help me to achieve increased wellness. Press 1 for disagree, 2 for agree, and 3 for no opinion does not apply. Polling has closed for this question. One moment while I transfer the results. Our next polling question is, as a result of this teleconference, I have a greater knowledge of how regular exercise may help with management of my MS symptoms. Press 1 for disagree, 2 for agree, and 3 for no opinion does not apply. Polling has closed for this question. One moment while I tally the results and prepare the next question. Our third polling question is, as a result of this teleconference, I have a greater knowledge of how good overall nutrition may help with help with management of my MS symptoms. Press 1 for disagree, 2 for agree, and 3 for no opinion does not apply. Polling is closed for this question. One moment while I tally the results and prepare the next question. And our fourth polling question is, I enjoy learning through a teleconference format. Press 1 for disagree, 2 for agree, and 3 for no opinion does not apply. Polling is closed for this question. One moment while I tally the results. Polling has now ended. Do the speakers have any closing comments?
I just want to thank everybody for joining us, and I just encourage everybody to continue experimenting with your nutrition and see how it can improve your health and wellness. Thanks.
I wanted to also thank everybody for taking out their time in the evening to learn some wonderful information from us. Exercise is highly important. Exercise has to be a forefront in your battle with this disease. And ask a lot of questions, do a lot of research, and definitely get education from your physical therapist or your athletic trainer. Very important. Thank you very much.
The conference is now concluded. You may disconnect.